This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, and we get to meet them each time. The idea to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we sure do learn a lot. We are educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. If you missed the last episode, you can find it online at hometownheroesradio.com. There's more than 350 episodes there for you. We heard Tom Rice of Coronado, California, explaining how he became a paratrooper with the 101st Airborne in World War II. When we left off, it was June 6th, 1944, D-Day, and he had parachuted behind enemy lines. It was still the middle of the night, and he had knocked on a Frenchman's door and gotten a little better idea of where he was.
We got through with that, went out on the road again with three of us, walking in the ditch real low, and a lieutenant ahead of me yelled, "Hey, Sergeant, come here." Now, he was standing at a large gate where cattle would go in and come out, and it was a pasture field in there. He was standing there and said, "Sergeant, I want you to walk around this field on the edge. I'm going to stay right here and wait." He had a carbine rifle, a short one, with a metal stock on it. This guy was bound to, had it in his mind, he's going to get a sniper. I'm a bait.
Thanks a lot.
I knew it was exactly what he was doing, so I walked that perimeter 600 and some yards, and I had my trigger finger ready to go, and I had that submachine gun up, you know, looking into the trees. Mm-hmm. I got back to the point where he set me off. He was gone. I learned a couple things. Never arrive at your point of departure as a final destination, because they could have seen it, could have watched me. 50-some years later, New York staff writer called, wanting to come out and interview me. He took 100 pictures of me for all what reason, I don't know. Then he started asking questions. And on the question period, he asked me to explain some heroism. I said they were all heroes. And then it hit me. I'll explain what happened right there. And I told him what happened, what that lieutenant did. I said, "This is a situation of cowardice. They printed that story. They printed my picture with it. And I hope that son of a gun saw it."
If he made it through the war.
If he made it, yeah. I figured this guy's going to get somebody killed. But so we wandered around there, out in fields, and a horse was had been hit with shrapnel. A medic I had with me, Robert Schill, he patched him up with sulfadiazone, and we used the horse as a protection to get to some other point. Went into a house, searching the houses, and I crossed a window, and I had a rifle shot come through for the sniper. It hit just in front of me and caught me in the leg. It was a hard, like I was hit like a baseball bat almost, you know. So I could pull the pant leg up and pulled it out and put it in my pocket. I never know what happened to it after that.
So this is your first day.
Yeah.
And you're already hit.
First day. This is June 6th.
And you've already got a wound in your leg.
Yeah, I got a wound that I didn't pay too much attention to. It didn't bother me that much, crying out loud. I'm not going to medic and say, "Give me a Purple Heart or make a record of this baloney." But I've known lieutenants who've done that.
Sure.
But we began to hook up with some of the guys. And on the road, we found maybe 15 or 20 of them. Major Allen was there. He organized us into a small group, put our packs down, drop our packs, don't take anything else with you except your ammunition. We're heading toward La Barquette Lock. Now, the set of locks there. And the Germans closed the locks to flood the entire area.
Right.
The locks were closed. We were going to open them. Now, by the time the locks were opened and the water flowed out and drained into the English Channel, the battle would have been miles beyond it. So I figured, this is a phony, crazy, stupid objective. But we went down there, and we ran into the 6th German Parachute Infantry Regiment. They were 3,000 in strength. The battalions were in two or three different places. One was in Perrier, and they were having a good time. They were having a party. And a messenger came in and said, "They're coming, they're coming." The aircraft were coming in. They weren't bombarding yet, but he heard all these aircraft coming, and the parachutes are dropping. In the British zone, they dropped dummy parachutes with explosives on them. So when they hit the ground, the explosive went to attract all the Germans over there. So things were pumping on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So Colonel Heidi, who was the commanding officer there, he got these guys organized. One battalion was to go to the beach.
And we're talking about the German forces.
Yeah,
now. Colonel
German
Heidi
forces.
Was with, the, right, with
yeah.
the German forces.
See, they were 300 feet above us.
Uh-huh. And you said 3,000 strong. How many do you think were with you?
It was 50.
3,000 versus 50?
50. Well, not quite yet. They were broken into three battalions.
Okay.
And the battalion, one battalion was to go to the beachhead and to get in between us and the landing forces to disrupt that landing.
Right.
We met them at a place called Penemy. Their second battalion evidently was a little bit north, but near the beach, they were coming south. Rifles slung on their shoulder. Did you see Saving Private Ryan?
Sure.
You remember these guys taken out with that captain looking for Private Ryan, smoking cigarettes and rifles slung?
Yep.
These Germans were singing their national anthem and
wow.
whatnot. Going toward Carentan, another battalion was in another opposite direction, some distance from them, going to W4, which was a blockhouse. They had Goliaths there with 200 pounds of dynamite on little automatic wheelbarrow kind of thing, and they would control them by radio, and they wanted to get those things in there to blow up any of the American forces that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But when the guys did come in, the W-4 had been knocked out, and these crazy little machines were running around. The guys would go up to them, put hand grenades on them, and then back off. And that's what would. But anyway, we got into a big battle with maybe 400 Germans.
And this is, now we're hearing why you said earlier that you had the worst possible drop.
Yeah.
So there's 50 of you, there's 400 Germans.
400 Germans.
And it's still dark?
No, it's light.
The sun has come up. It's the morning of June 6th.
Yeah.
And what do you have personally to use against the enemy?
My Thompson submachine gun.
Uh-huh.
But on the way down to La Barquette Lock, three of us were ordered to go to the lock and outpost it. So I didn't get to Penemy, which was maybe 300 yards from me. I was at La Barquette Lock, so we outposted it that night. We figured some of the Germans in Carentan are going to come down on patrols,
mm-hmm.
whatnot. 400 of them are in battle with 50 Americans. We captured them all.
Wow.
Amazing. Captured them all. So we set up that night because I figured certainly there's going to be some Germans coming down finally trying to find out what's going on. I set up about six stakes. I set wire between the stakes. We hung wire from the stakes vertically and tied tin cans on them. In the tin cans, I put bolts and nuts and all kinds of things. I mean, it's a silly thing, but it's kind of creative there.
Mm-hmm.
So any patrol coming through has to come down that way. And he's not going to be able to see that because it's so dark and the metal is dark and it's kind of low. He's going to trip on it. 2 o'clock in the morning, patrol came through. I was situated right in the corner. The orchard is long leg and the short leg. I was right in the corner of the short leg. The other two guys were on the long leg. And we were tied together, wrist to wrist, with parachute suspension line. If any noise or anything you hear comes through there, you're alerted for some reason. We stayed 2 hours on and then slept. We alternated that. Just jerked those cords. And we just start shooting out there. German patrol came through. We got one of them. He might have been his only man. I'm not sure. Can't prove it. But he was out there, and he moaned all night long. One of the guys had experience as working in a mortuary, so he took his trench knife and went out there and finished him off. And so we pulled him in the morning. We dug a trench for him in the orchard, and We cut some limbs off the tree and made a cross out of it. I still have his parachute wings, cloth wings. I hid them on my shoe, so if I ever captured with those things, boy, I'd be in real trouble. One of the other incidents that took place there is the Catholic chaplain set up an aid station close to where I landed. And there were some guys that were pretty seriously wounded. Some of them were hysterical. And the Germans were coming in that direction. They did penetrate the aid station, and they were looking for weapons. If they found weapons in that aid station, that would have been the end of that aid station. But they took the captain's Samson, Catholic clergyman, marched him down the road. There's plenty of evidence on this. They put him up against a wall with a firing squad. He had his helmet on with a Christian cross on it, so they knew. And a German officer came down the road wearing a Christian cross on a necklace. He saw that and stopped it.
Wow.
Amazing. And they conversed a little bit as best they could, showing that they're both clergymen, whatever, you know. But ultimately, you go, Father Samson, he got out of that one, but he was captured in Bastogne, and he was a prisoner of war for the rest of the war.
Wow.
But anyway, we got together again, and after 37 days of doing all this maneuvering, and a battle took place at St. Marie de Mont.
So you're still guarding the locks.
Still involved there June 7th at the locks.
Uh-huh.
But some of the guys that did gather together were at St. Combe de Mont, and they were trying to defend that. That was a hot battle there.
Looking back, are you thankful that they sent you to the lock, even though you didn't see the reason for it?
If we had been away from the lock, we would have been at St. Marie de Mont.
And there were plenty of guys that were wounded there, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and I know that you'd be wounded more later. But I'm just curious, because you shared that you didn't get the significance of, you know, that it wouldn't have mattered with the lock, whether it was open or closed, but that's where you were. And it turned out that was a pretty good place for you to be, right?
It was a safer place than at the battle, because this battalion of Germans were coming down on them, and the guys had their submachine guns and their 30 caliber and their bazookas ready. Germans were crossing the canals. They let them come within maybe two canals of them, and they got itchy, and they opened fire. The Germans went to the ground. A number of them were wounded. So Colonel Johnson and two German-speaking American paratroopers went out with a white flag to contact the officer in charge, and he came forward, and he told them to surrender. He said, it's too early in the day to surrender. Too early in the day. So he didn't make any points there, so he went back, and on his way back, he was fired on. Then the guys opened fire on him.
Wow.
They killed a lot of them. He went back out the second time, told them, the officer, to tell the wounded to put their bayonets on their rifles, put the rifle in the ground, put their helmet on top of their bayonet. Then we'll come out. Let's have a truce.
Yeah.
They did. They organized a truce. They picked up the Germans, and none of us got hit. Picked up some of the Germans and gave them first aid as best they could.
Wow.
So we go back to England.
Yeah.
We had 18 parachute drops put in front of us on paper all over France and mainly France. Most of those, almost all of them, failed. We would go to the airport, parachute up, no ammunition. When they didn't give us ammunition, then I knew we weren't going in.
Right.
So we'd go back. So these were just kind of training things back and forth. 17 failed, and the last one was Market Garden.
So 17 times you got on a plane with them saying this is a jump, and it wasn't.
Well, let's qualify that. We got orders to do it, but not all the times we went to the airport. The front line was kind of staggering, losing and gaining. And so the orders were not fulfilled. But we got the orders to be ready.
So Market Garden would be your next jump. And there's a lot that's been written about this. As much as D-Day is celebrated for the overall success, Market Garden in the big picture was not a success. It was disastrous.
Yeah.
How did you experience it?
I made a nice jump at 1,200 feet. I kept going up. I'm wondering why I'm going up. Evidently, I'd hit some thermals or something. I was going up and drifting. I kept reaching for legs. I was talking to myself, we got to get down, got to get down. Well, about 300 feet, I was coming over a thatched house.
This is in Holland?
Yeah, this is in Holland. I jumped number one again.
Mm-hmm.
We came in a nice formation. We were on the wrong drop zone. Then there was a drop zone A1 further down. He missed A, didn't recognize anything. We jumped on A1, and I was coming down at a couple hundred feet trying to find out where I was going to land. Now, it looks to me like I'm going to land on this house. So I started maneuvering the risers, got away from that. But the next thing I saw at 50 feet was steel picket fence line around a cabbage patch right next to the house. They were pointed like the ones out here. I'm going to land on one of those.
Ouch.
So I just went whole hog on the risers and slipped into the cabbage patch, hit the cabbage patch. I was okay. my submachine gun jammed into the mud. It's not useful right now unless I clean it up. The only thing I worried was, how am I going to get out of this thing, get out of that fence line, if there's enemy around, because I couldn't defend myself. So anyway, here we are off the drop zone, 10 kilometers from Vegel, V-E-G-H-E-L, which we're supposed to hold. We're supposed to hold the bridges and the railroad overpasses. The guys began to accumulate and going down the main highway, and the Dutch people were out on the side of the road with gingerbread and Calvados. And that Calvados is potent stuff because it's an apple country.
Mm-hmm.
And the gingerbread was 1 inch square and about 2 feet long. Great big long things like that. They were giving that to us, wanted to talk to us. We got into Vegel, and all of the people in the city were in the city square, and they were just milling around. There was thousands of people, and there was a lot of spies in there because one woman came up, and how many Americans are dropped?
Huh.
Oh, I said, 500,000.
If only that were the truth, that operation might have gone a little better. When we come back, we'll hear Tom's memories of that prolonged battle, as well as the twist of fate that cut short his time fighting in the Battle of the Bulge. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.